welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Visit us on the web at tailwind-coaching.com or like us on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching. And now, your host, Coach Rob.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Yet another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am Coach Rob, and we are here to talk about the Climbing Podcast Part 2. As a quick little recap, we went through part one last time, which was what makes a good climber. We talked about your power to weight ratio, the amount of power you're putting out versus the amount of weight you're carrying around between yourself and your kit, your ability to switch from one energy production system or one energy system or source to another source, things that help you do that, the various skills that you have in terms of being able to produce power, and your ability to suffer. We also covered a little bit on climbing positions and standing and out of the saddle and hand positions, etc., etc. Here in part two, we're going to go over a few different things that we didn't get to in the first podcast. Things like gearing, the importance of leg speed while climbing, leg speed and standing, and how that affects your efficiency. And, of course, we're going to go over something that'll help you get a little more out of these tips, how to flatten your ride routes and flatten your terrain and make your overall time a little bit quicker. But first, I want to go through a couple of housekeeping things. Number one, if you're listening to me on iTunes, thank you very much, and please go ahead and rate that podcast that you're listening to right now on iTunes. The more people that rate the podcast, the more people will actually hear it, the more it will get out there, and again, the more motivation I have to keep providing these kinds of tips for you folks, okay? in terms of coaching, yeah, I still have one spot open for my late summer, early fall one-on-one coaching. And if you're interested in getting to that spot, I've had a couple of inquiries. If you're interested, make sure you get in contact with me sooner rather than later. All right? CoachRobDC@gmail.com, the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or you can find me on the website at tailwind-coaching.com. Additionally, as of August 1st, I'm going to have a coupon available. I'm going to take 15% off any and all of my training plans. That includes the high-intensity trainer sessions that we will be talking about a little bit today, and certainly in part three of the Climbing Podcast. Yes, folks, it's so big, it wouldn't fit in one, it wouldn't fit in two, it's going to three. It goes to 11. No, I'm just kidding. In any case, that 15% off code is going to be AugustFit on the website, so put any of those items in your cart and then enter the offer code AugustFit at checkout and you'll take 15% off of everything in your cart. cross season, cyclocross season is coming up very, very soon. In fact, here in the Northeast, I believe the season opener, Nittany Cross, is September 8th and 9th, perhaps? And let's see here, Nittany Cross is the 8th and 9th of September. That is the opening of the cyclocross season for the most part. I'm looking at having my cyclocross module, my cyclocross fitness module, available no later than August 4th, 5th, perhaps, something like that. That's where I'd like to have that available. Once that comes out, I will be running a deal on that for cyclocross season as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that post and for that that cyclocross module. Also in the pipe, I've got a Criterium module coming somewhere down the line. Crit season is just about over here, especially in the Northeast, but those of you who are listening to me from down under, you may find this to be of some value to you. So look for that in the future as well. But that being done, we're going to talk about climbing. We're going to start off with our second part of the climbing podcast by talking about gearing and the old favorite, compact or standard. We'll be right back after this one moment. All right, discussing the favorite topic of gearing. Standard gearing or compact gearing? Well, let's define something here first. The standard gearing that we're going to talk about in your front gears on your crankset, we're going to be talking about a 53-tooth large ring and a 39-tooth small ring. And there used to be a 53-42 was a standard, quote, standard double. You can also use a 52-38, 53-38, etc., etc. But for the purposes of what we're talking about, we're going to talk about a 53-39. For compact gearing, again, those chain rings on the front on the crankset, we're going to be talking about a 50-tooth large ring and either a 34 or 36 small ring. Now, again, this just depends upon the individual person. The 50-36 will tend to shift significantly better than the 50-34. The 16-tooth gap between the 50 and the 34 is pretty hard for a regular derailleur to jump a chain up, and tends to lead to some drops when a chain drops from the large ring onto the small ring. All right, but the idea behind the compact crankset and the standard crankset really is a difference in bolt circle diameter. Can refer to my post on choosing crankset gearing. It's probably my most popular post on the site, actually, believe it or not. But very quickly, a compact BCD bolt circle diameter of 110 millimeters versus a 130 millimeter bolt circle diameter for a standard crankset. And again, that affects the kind of rings that you can put onto either crankset. But why would you pick one over the other? Well, a lot of this comes down to individual rider fitness. Somebody who is, let's say, a beginner, or even within that 3 years of beginning cycling, I would almost always recommend the compact crankset. In fact, for 90% or so, maybe 85 or 90% of people, I would honestly really recommend that compact crankset, and I would do it for a couple of reasons. The number one reason I would recommend that compact is because it gives you a lower low gear, lower low chain ring, smaller chain ring, and it doesn't sacrifice much in terms of a large chain ring. There's also an argument, if you look at some gearing charts, however, that the large chain ring is more useful. You can use more cassette cogs with that large chain ring because it is slightly smaller. Again, I believe that comes directly down to rider fitness. The other reason to pick a compact crankset is that you can mount almost any gearing to a compact crankset. There are 38 and 52 tooth rings made, which will bolt onto a 110 millimeter BCD crank or compact crank. So there's really very little reason nowadays. Let me take that back. There are a couple of reasons to go with a standard crankset. But there are really no reasons to not go with a compact crankset. Those of you who are looking at gearing and you decide to choose a standard, I would expect you are either flatland racer, flatland guys, very, very fit racers, sprinters, or extremely, extremely fit climbers. The other exception to that would be the climber who really has a very mashing style as opposed to a very spinning style. Okay, so those are your options in terms of gearing. Again, in terms of cassette gearing, the cogs, the gears on the back of your bike, you can refer to my post on choosing cassette gearing. Again, another very popular post that I wrote. I'll include those links in this podcast. However, pairing your cassette to your crankset is probably the most important thing to remember. For a compact crankset, typically I like to have people on a closer ratio cog set, something like an 1126 or a 1225 is a really exceptional cog set for a crank like that. On a standard crank, for hilly terrain, most people that I have worked with will tend to run either an 1128 or a 1227, depending on how finicky they are in terms of controlling their cadence. The only time that I would expect somebody to run something significantly smaller, bear in mind that a lot of people get away with the 1225 or 1126 on a standard crank as well. The one or two tooth difference is very small. The only time I would expect somebody to run something smaller, an 1123 or 1223, otherwise known, could be a straight block cassette, would be for a very, very flat, very fast criterium race or something of that nature. Or again, somebody who is frankly just ridiculously strong. And even in that case, yeah, excuse me while I think, collect my thoughts there and think of a good way to say this. Even in the case of someone who is extremely, extremely strong, running an 1123 with a standard in hilly terrain is kind of stupid, to be perfectly honest with you. There's a famous occurrence at on the Devil's Kitchen Climb up in the Catskills, Platte Clove Road. Back, I believe it was in 86, the Tour de Trump came through there, and the European professionals kind of scoffed at the simpleness of climbs in the American Northeast. 1.5 miles of sustained double-digit gradients had several European pros on their 1123s often walking. So those are professionals walking. So the idea that you can bring an 1123 and conquer any terrain is kind of stupid. But anyway, passing that along. Gearing overall, even though we've given some tips on crankset gearing, we've given some tips on cassette gearing, cadence is going to be really what dictates what kind of gearing you choose. If you are physiologically a rider who relies on a higher cadence, tends to produce a lot of power in at threshold in your aerobic zones, you're probably going to select a compact crankset and a close ratio cassette to keep your cadence well and truly under control. Or you may actually be able to select and get away with a standard crankset with a wider range cassette and still get away with that as well. It's entirely possible. It just depends on the person. Personally, I prefer a standard crankset with a 1227. There's not a single climb in the tri-state area that I've been unable to complete that I've had to get off and stop because I've been unable to complete it. I've been able to complete every climb that I've conquered or attempted in the tri-state area on a 1227 with a standard crank. And now it's not to brag. It's not to toot my own horn. All right, I do like to climb. However, all the techniques that we talked about in the last podcast, I put to good use. Constantly working on my climbing, working on various techniques to try and put myself head and shoulders above most other people when the road goes up. All right. Now the reason that you should be selecting your gearing based on cadence is very simple. Cadence and cadence control is how you control your energy system utilization. Okay. The faster you spin, the more you tax your aerobic system. The more you mash, the more you tax your muscular system. Okay? Being able to control your cadence, not having too hard a gear, not having too easy a gear, is the key to climbing well. All right. Now, this is after we've gone through all the physiological stuff and we've done all the work. The key to climbing well and climbing sustained things is to control your cadence and thereby control your energy production via system control. Okay. And I'll tell you this. Most of the cyclists that I see are in the wrong gear. All right. Those of you who are out there listening, most of you are probably climbing in the wrong gear. Now, I don't mean to say that as anything derogatory. I don't mean it to sound as a put down. However, it usually is true. Most of you out there are climbing into easy a gear. Okay, most of you have been indoctrinated by the Lance Armstrong and the Bradley Wiggins and the Chris Froome and all the rest of the bullshit that the professional Peloton feeds you as a cover for their doping. That's right, folks. All that bullshit, that high cadence stuff, the asymmetric chain rings, the asymmetric chain rings, all of that stuff is just a smokescreen to cover how these guys really train, and it's using a needle. All right, but we're not going to get into that, not in this podcast. But either way, that is a lot of bullshit. All right, you've been indoctrinated to think that the higher the cadence, the better. Well, I'm going to tell you one thing. Most of you, if you're spinning at a 95 cadence, you don't have the muscular endurance and the muscular strength to back up that cadence. And that's fine. I understand. If you don't have that, that's fine. However, you need to understand that you need to be able to shift out of that aerobic energy system paradigm once in a while in order to be successful in your climbing. Okay? And now, that takes us directly to why leg speed and cadence is absolutely so important. And we're going to talk about that right after this. All right, as I mentioned a few moments ago, leg speed is basically the way that we control our energy systems and what energy system is producing power at that time. Now, let me ask you a question to you, the listener. How many times have you been climbing anything for anything more than a few minutes? Maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. Maybe 10, let's say 10 minutes. How many times have you been on a 10-minute climb and you've been toddling along in your nice easy gear and suddenly you start to pant? Once you start to pant, you start to basically lose your breath. Anybody out there? How many of you have had to stop and catch your breath, or stopped at the top of a climb, breathing very heavy, to the point where you're almost hyperventilating? I'm going to guess there's quite a few of you who have your hands up right now, or you're nodding at your computer, or at your iPhone, or at your car, or whatever, and you're going, yeah, I've done that. All right. Again, this concept of cadence control goes back to modulating your energy systems. All right, as I said before, higher cadence tends to tax the aerobic system. Okay, you tend to be forcing more blood through the heart. Okay, you tend to be pushing more frequently pumping blood back to the heart. So your heart and lungs are taxed extremely higher. All right, the tax on those systems is much higher. All right, the lower cadence, the longer you're pushing through the pedals, through each pedal stroke, you do not push as much blood volume back to the heart. The heart doesn't have to pump as fast to get that blood in and out. Okay, so fortunately, those two different systems exist. So you can guess what I'm going to say next. All right. By being able to control your cadence on any given climb, you can give one system a rest while putting the impetus on the other. Okay? The higher cadence cyclists, those of you who like to climb, you bought into the Lance Armstrong fairy tale of the 95 RPM cadence is faster. Well, that's great. Now, assuming you have the muscular endurance to keep that up and to push that, and the muscular strength to push that high cadence at a very high tension, if you're constantly losing your breath on climbs, you're not giving that aerobic system enough rest. You're not giving their heart and lungs enough time to rest and relax and recuperate, And eventually they burn out. They can't go any harder, and your body enters that survival mode that says, stop, you're overdoing it. Okay? Conversely, those of you who ride like Jan Ulrich, or actually like most of the very amateur cyclists I see doing, mashing away at 50 RPM uphill, you're the ones who are complaining that you can't turn the pedals over on your climbs, and you can't get to the top, you have to stop for that reason. Well, again, this could go back to gearing. You could be significantly overgeared, whether it's a macho thing, well, I need a standard crankset because the macho guys use it, or you simply just don't have the fitness, or that's what your bike came with and you don't know any better. Now you're going to know better. You're the guys, again, if you're the mashing type that stops because you can't tick the pedals over anymore, you're the guys who are overtaxing your muscular system. Your heart and lungs are sitting there screaming at you going, dude, use me. But you're just, your legs are telling you, nope, done, can't do anymore. All right. Now, the ability to change your cadence shifts you from one energy system to the next. Okay, so you can see if you are spinning at that 95 RPM, you're going great guns. Suddenly you start to get tired, your breath starts to get ragged, you really start to feel some weakness in the legs and you're falling off. All right, what do you do? What do you do? You got a gun to your head, what do you do? We'll get to a little Keanu Reeves, a little speed thing here, all right? It's just a little leg speed. I know. The 7:30 show is different from the 10:30 show, but they both suck. Believe me. Anyway, you're in a situation where you're spinning away your 95 RPM and you're starting to lose that breath. What do you do? Well, first of all, are you climbing in the right gear? Let's assume that you actually are and you're able to push that gear properly. What you should be doing at that point, as your breath starts to become scarce, shall we say, is shift a couple of gears harder, a couple of cogs harder, and suddenly shift over to pushing those pedals with your muscular endurance and your muscular strength. That ability to shift and give a few, even a few pedal strokes, but maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds worth of rest to your aerobic system, you'll find that you can shift back to that aerobic system and generally get some more time out of it. Okay? The one thing that most people tend to do when they try to shift energy systems, however, is they try to stand up. And when they stand up, they tend to, everything tends to go to hell, for lack of a better description. And I'm going to explain why. All right? Leg speed, the idea of leg speed control and cadence control is not only confined to climbing in the saddle. Most people, really, when it gets down to it, they climb well in the saddle, and they can climb extremely well in the saddle with proper training and proper technique training. All right. However, very, very few people climb well out of the saddle. Very few people look smooth out of the saddle. They aren't very smooth out of the saddle. They're kind of gangly. The bike sort of thrashes back and forth side to side. You know, the front wheel is wobbling and wavering all over the place. Okay. A lot of upper body movements, a lot of wasted energy. Poor form, okay, and lack of training makes those out of the saddle efforts much more taxing on the body than they need to be. So, while you may have the idea of cadence control firmly implanted in your head, and you've decided, okay, look, listen, I'm losing my breath here on this climb, I need to get some tension in my muscles, use my muscular force, strength, and endurance in order to give my lungs and heart a break. You make the mistake of standing up, all right? You're not smooth standing up. So suddenly now you're putting out all this extra energy, your heart and lungs don't really get much of a chance to recover because they're trying to cope with all this extra energy. How do you correct that? How do you become smooth? How do you get that Lucien Van Impe kind of pedal stroke that defined his reign as the king of the mountains, as one of the smoothest, most graceful climbers of all time? Consistent use of standing drills and standing cadence drills can significantly improve your fluidity, all right, your pedal stroke, your efficiency. It will quiet your upper body, and it will improve your energy use efficiency, okay? Basically, by settling, remember we talked about last podcast, we talked about when you're out of the saddle, you're adding all of that extra weight to your legs, all of that torso weight, that weight of your head, everything, all that is being supported by your legs again. The more that your upper body moves, the more your arms move, your hands, your arms, your shoulders, your neck, your head, your torso. Every time those muscles contract, they require energy, and moving is muscle contraction. Okay, so if your muscles are contracting a lot, your upper body is contracting a lot, you're spending a lot of extra energy. All right, the idea behind standing drills and standing cadence work will be to simply decrease that wasted energy. All right, and again, cadence drills in general, one-legged drills, speed work, spin-ups, high cadence work in a big ring, those are all designed to increase your pedal stroke efficiency, help the leg that's unloading. Well, let's back up a bit. When you push down on the pedals, for example, with your right leg, that left leg is not so much doing anything in terms of pulling as much as it is getting out of the way. All right. Now, this is doubly a problem while you're standing because, if you remember last time, we talked about throwing your weight into each pedal stroke. That can lead to that kind of herky-jerky type standing, out-of-the-box climbing that is really inefficient and really not very graceful. It's really ugly, really. What you need to learn to do is to throw your weight around in great, big, circular, smooth pedal strokes, okay? And again, my climbing module, several of my high-intensity trainer workouts all focus on this, all right? Those techniques that you need to drive the knee forward to really make those big circles and throw that weight around properly, create that smoothness and settle down that upper body. All right. That's how you become much more efficient standing. And that's how you are able to change your energy systems by simply getting out of the saddle and changing your cadence. All right. And that's how you're able to do that efficiently. All right. So we've gone through the importance of gearing. We've gone through a little bit on the importance of leg speed, both in the saddle and out of the saddle. One last thing I'd like to tackle in this part two of the climbing podcast, and that's going to be how to increase your average speed over any given hilly ride. And we'll get to that right after a quick break. All right, getting back to it. How to increase your speed over a hilly ride. Well, we're going to talk about something called flattening your ride or flattening your terrain. Okay, this kind of technique is, well, it involves one of my high intensity trainer workout skills, a skill that most really good, efficient cyclists will know and understand. And that is the rollover concept is one of the things that we do with this. The rollover concept, as short and sweet as I can describe it, is once you hit the top of a climb, all right, and this I experience all the time in races with less experienced riders, people who haven't been riding as much or who seem to overestimate their fitness a little bit. A lot of guys will get to the top of a climb and they'll simply stop pedaling. They'll soft pedal or coast. There is a distinct notion that, yeah, you just spend a lot of energy on a climb, you get up there real quick, you recover on the backside. Well, yes and no. All right, that's not always necessarily true. The idea behind rolling over, and those of you who actually take this technique to heart and use it can really put a lot of hurt on the other guys in your group, even if they're better climbers. They'll think they have you beaten to the top of the climb, And suddenly, 100 meters past the summit, you come blazing by them. Generally, the idea is to gradually increase your power output throughout the duration of the climb. So if you have a 10-minute climb, you may be starting that first 3 minutes slightly below your threshold. You might be letting those guys go off in the distance. But you're ratcheting up the intensity as you get closer to the summit. As you hit the summit of any given climb, you really ratchet up the pace, and more than that, ratchet up the leg speed. You speed up your cadence. By speeding up your cadence, you sort of power over the top into the false flat or into the descent. And you carry that cadence and speed across the top and into the descent. As you hit the descent, the false flat, etc. at the top, you can continue to row through your gears to keep that tension on and that power building. Now, very typically, you'll hit the crest of a climb at VO2 max power levels, or maybe even above. And as you head down the descent, or into the false flat, your goal would be to settle into a threshold level effort. All right. Now, that rollover technique is worked on quite a few times in my climbing power rollover. High-intensity trainer workout, if you're interested in that, you can find it on the training plan section. However, that's a very important technique to understand for this idea of flattening your terrain. What is the idea of flattening your terrain now? Well, this one's actually very simple. Flattening your terrain simply says that instead of giving an all-out effort on the climbs and coasting throughout the descents and flat portions, you meter your efforts, maybe pull back on those climbs a little bit, and add a little bit more effort on the descents and on the flats, okay? Now, this comes down to a lot of cases, what we are good at. And we tend to put more effort into the things we're good at. We don't tend to put a lot of effort into the things that we have trouble with, okay? So if we're a climber, we tend to spend a lot of energy on those climbs. We tend to play to our strengths. We figure, well, if the climb's coming up and I'm a good climber, I can put more time into people and get an overall faster time. Oftentimes we're sandbagging it on the flat portions. Okay, I've been there, I've done that plenty of times. Conversely, maybe you're a bigger guy. Maybe your power to weight ratio is not so good. Maybe you're just flat out a flatland rider. You hate spending the energy on the climbs. You're not good at them, so you just ride them to survive them. But you kill it on the flat portions of the course. You absolutely killed it on the flat portions. All right? Thinking, well, if I can put out extra energy here, I can really put a dent in that overall. No, it doesn't work like that. If you put out 110% of your effort on the things that you're good at, but only 70% of the things on the things that you're not good at, that only averages out to 90%. Okay? If you can put out maybe 110%, actually, I did that math wrong. It should be 120% on, no, nonetheless, 110 and 80%. 110, let's go back a minute. That's what happens when you, this is what happens when you record a podcast after you've been racing. If you're putting out 120% of your effort, 120% effort on those climbs, but you don't have anything left. You're only putting out 70%, okay, on the flats, or you're on the downhills, you're descending, all right? You're putting out 190% divided by 2, 185, it's about 95% overall, all right? Now, what would happen if you could dial it back to 110% on the climbs? All right, or 100% on the climbs, and dial it up to 95% on the flats, or 90% on the flats. You could be easily another 5% faster. All right, do you see where I'm going with this? Even though my math stupid brain can't seem to figure it out on the fly here. The idea is generally this. If you're a climber, instead of burning all your matches on the climbs, save some energy for the descents and for the flats, okay? Spend a little extra energy there and drop a little bit on the climbs. You'll probably find you end up going faster overall. Conversely, if you're a flatland rider or a bigger guy who doesn't like to climb, spend a little more of your energy on those climbs and pull it back a little bit on the flat stuff. Again, you will probably find that you will suddenly be a little bit faster. Okay, this concept generally, like I said, overall will increase the speed of your ride, and you'll probably end up feeling a little bit fresher at the end of the ride instead of having a couple of massive matches burned and then basically toddling along for the rest of the ride. Keeping a nice, relatively even pace and even energy expenditure is almost always a better thing to do than to put out a couple of really giant efforts and then just, sandbag it the rest of the way. Okay. The question would be, where does rolling over the climb come into this? Well, climbing and descending and all of this is all about momentum. In fact, climbing is in itself is a battle against gravity, as we talked about. Momentum is the force that helps you fight gravity in this case. So if you have momentum going forward and you lose it, it will cost you twice as much to get it back as it will to maintain it. All right. So if you can maintain the momentum you built up on that climb over the crest of the climb and down the back side of it, you're going to be ahead of the game. Now, if you can carry that momentum through the descent and into the next climb, again, you'll be that much further ahead of the game. All right, so that's the purpose of rolling a climb and how it fits into the flattening of the terrain here. All right, again, most flatlanders will basically soft pedal when they hit the top of a climb. I've seen it dozens of times in races. Most climbers will soft pedal when they hit the top of a climb because they're used to either waiting for somebody else or they've spent so much on the climb because their goal was to get to the top first. All right, they soft pedal and they lose that momentum too. Okay, I guarantee you, if you use that rollover technique, somebody might beat you to the top of a climb. You know what? They could really give a shit if they do. But if you can catch them within 100 meters of the summit, going down, that's huge. That'll be amazing, and that'll, you know, your riding group will go, dude, what have you been doing? That's awesome. And you can pass that along to them. All right, so doing a little recap, we talked about the importance of gearing. Now, gearing, again, is a huge, huge, huge topic that I could go into and spend a lot of time. I talked about compact standard crank sets. I talked about rear cassettes or cogs. There are two posts on Tailwind Coaching, tailwind-coaching.com on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. There's two posts. I will link them in the post with this podcast in it. You can take a look at. Again, remember that cadence is the really important thing when choosing gearing, and cadence is the key to allowing you to rest various energy systems on longer climbs. So, leg speed is your key and the thing that you need to be working on when you are practicing your climbing. And standing drills are one of the absolute most important things to do if you want to take your climbing to the next level and be a more efficient, smoother, faster climber. All right. So, all that being said, and with everything that we've talked about here in the climbing podcast part two, I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to encourage you to go over to iTunes and rate this podcast. I want to encourage you to send me emails at coachrobdc@gmail.com. If you have questions, I always get to all the emails that I get. It sometimes takes me a few days, depends on how much work I've got on my plate and how much email is backed up on me. But I always do respond to everybody. Okay. If you have a consult request for me, I'm going to be changing the way that goes in the very near future. But at this time, go ahead and send them to me at coachrobdc@gmail.com or contact me through the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page or again on the website at tailwind-coaching.com. All right. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want you to climb well, ride safe, ride happy, get strong, practice your standing drills, and overall, I wish you be well. Keep your rubber side down, keep the soft side up, and I will be talking to you real soon for the Climbing Podcast, Part 3.